was Foster Brooks, otherwise known as the Lovable Lush. Chris and Rob, late night talk show. The phone number is 749-1444. In just a minute, the Chris and Rob Attaboy Awards. But first, let's talk to George.
On WAIF.
Should I turn my radio down?
Nah, dude, you're fine. What's going on?
Well, I don't hear a lot of, like, really concern, it seems like, about the asteroid that could be coming in 28 years from now.
We covered that topic extensively 2 weeks ago, George.
Well, I wasn't listening to the radio then.
That's not our fault.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Is that it?
That's it.
I just had ideas of really how to stop it other than anything.
Okay.
Well, like magnetic pulses.
Is this going to be like a top 10 list? I hope it's really like a top 10. I really hope this is like a top 10 list.
Well, okay. I've got several ideas.
Okay, let's hear them.
Well,
go, Anton.
One of them is you take and you make concentrated magnetic pulses and you focus them onto the asteroid that's coming in, right?
Well, magnets attract one another, so wouldn't the magnetic pulses attract?
But the other polarity, they repel.
Oh, I guess they do. Like if you take two refrigerator magnets, sometimes they'll make, you can't put them together.
Right.
Hey.
North Pole
but
does not attract.
You're talking about reversing the Earth's magnetic field, and that could screw
not
everything up.
Not the Earth, reversing the asteroids.
Mm.
But you got to be careful.
It would repel.
You got to be careful, though, because Earth's magnetic field are forces that are not to be tampered with.
Well, see, something like that you wouldn't do in the Earth's magnetic field. Right. You'd have to do it out in space.
Are you like a scientist, George?
What? No, I'm just an inventor. I'm an observer.
What's your other idea to get rid of the asteroid, George?
Okay. Well, now, if you were going to use atomic bombs...
You can't use atomic bombs. It wouldn't work.
You would want to use them in a succession of explosions. So the wave front of it would push the asteroid slowly out of trajectory.
You got to be careful, because if you got all that radioactive debris floating around outer space, it could come back to Earth and, kill all of us.
Well, it wouldn't be meant to blow the asteroid apart. It would just be the force would be pushing against
it. There'd still be fallout from the bomb.
I don't know if it hurt anything.
Okay.
The gravity of the sun's much more powerful than ours, and it'd probably be pulled into the sun.
Okay,
and
our
atmosphere would protect us from the rest.
What's your other idea, George?
Okay. Well.
Are you thinking of it right now? Does it involve a big slingshot?
No.
Okay.
It does involve a very large laser.
Really? Where are we going to get that?
Well, kind of like a particle laser.
Yeah?
Everybody on the side of the planet that has, all as many as possible, they all shoot at the same time at the asteroid.
What if we sent out a huge ruby and put it between the sun and this asteroid, time it just right so that the sun hits the ruby, creating a laser-like effect onto the asteroid, thus disintegrating it into toaster-sized asteroids.
Right. Now let's manufacture this ruby.
We're going to have the technology in 28 years.
Well, in space, it's possibly to create ginormous ones. You never know.
Any other ideas, George?
Well, I had an idea for a spacecraft.
Why hasn't NASA hired you yet? What are you doing in Cincinnati, Ohio, George?
Well, now, imagine a spacecraft where it's made of a light framework, but about 8 inches of spider web.
What? Spider web?
Right. Proportionally, spider web is stronger than steel.
Yes.
But now, if you had 8 inches of solid spider web compressed and then, like, coated, that would be a very tough material.
But where are you going to get it? Spiders are pretty gross, though, and you're going to need a lot of spiders to do that.
Oh,
and
they're not gross.
Oh,
and some places in the world, they use it for fishing line. Like
spider web? No, not spider web.
Yes.
Who uses spider webs for fishing line?
Out in one of the Polynesian places.
Yeah, Polynesian. Polynesians use spider webs for... Yeah. Well, you learn something new on the Chris and Rob show every time, don't you? Don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for your call, George.
I've enjoyed listening to your show a few times when I found it at this time.
Well, what do you do for a living, George?
Well, right now, I am a receiver of Social Security Disability, but not for long.
Well, you should be using your talents.
I'm getting ready to take computer graphics.
Oh, yeah, because you're a talented and smart individual, George. You should be doing something that benefits mankind instead of, you know, suckling off the teat of the government.
Well, when I create my movie, The Good Old Dad Society, I think it'll help out some things.
The what?
The Good Old Dad Society.
Who's going to be in this movie? It sounds like one of those Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon kind of things.
Well, now, I'd like... Robin Williams would play this one character, a little court jester, and he would pop into existence around this guy's head.
He'd play a very hairy court jester.
Yeah. But, I mean, and like, now picture this, the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
Bolts of energy from all over the universe converging out by Pluto into a smile 5 times wider than Jupiter.
Man, that would be a big smile.
And then it condenses down into a big golden laughing head coming in to around Earth about twice the size of Jupiter.
If anybody wants to talk to George, call 961-8900 now.
The Big Golden Laughing Head, is that going to be the name of the movie?
No, The Good Old Dad Society.
Okay, I'm sorry. Big Golden Laughing Head.
Well,
what
does the Big Golden Laughing Head have to do with somebody's dad?
Well, The Good Old Dad Society, you take... G-O-D-S, God,
mm-hmm.
And the way to be a part of the Good Old Dad Society is you do something for someone,
uh-huh.
Preferably without them knowing you're doing it, and then you celebrate their good fortune with them at receiving that thing that they needed so desperately, and then you'll be a member of the Good Old Dad Society.
Sort of like your secret pal at church.
Hmm?
Sort of like your secret pal at your school or your church.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder who sent me this Valentine. It's from my secret pal.
Yeah. Now, what I'd probably say is, if you want to help somebody like that, you know, leave it in their mailbox or leave it in a way that'll get to them and put on their Good Old Dad Society. That might be one thing you could do.
That's heavy.
Well, how are you going to fund this? You know, Hollywood, it takes a lot of money to make a big-time Hollywood blockbuster. How are you going to fund the movie, George?
Well, now there's a process I got to go through.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be taking the computer graphics, but I got a tremendous story base. I'm going to check with Pixar. You know the ones that made Toy Story?
Right. Oh yeah.
I already did an internet search with them.
So this could be a computer graphic movie?
Yeah.
That'd be very cool.
But now, have you ever heard of Larry Niven?
No, George. Who's Larry Niven?
Well, now. I don't listen to your show very often. You might have talked about him 100 times, but he's a very, very good science fiction writer.
Larry
Niven. And he wrote a book called Ringworld,
mm-hmm.
That is just phenomenal. And it just screams to be made into a movie.
Yeah.
Now just imagine an 8-foot-tall cat creature called a Kzinti.
That'll make me sneeze.
And then there's a 3-legged thing called a puppeteer. Now that's in the book.
Yeah.
There's a 200-year-old human called Louis Wu. And there's a girl in there named Teela Brown that's bred for luck. It'd make a just fantastic movie.
What's the name of it?
Ringworld. Imagine you take all the planets in the solar system and turn them into a strip. And then you make it in the orbit where the planet would be, and it's a continuous ring that's around a trillion miles around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 1 million miles wide, and it's got 1,000-mile high walls on the edge, and it's rotated at 770 miles an hour to make one gravity.
Oh.
That's the ring world.
Man, people who write science fiction books have very creative imaginations, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
I tell you, it was a fantastic science fiction. James P. Hogan is another fantastic writer.
What about Ray Bradbury, George? You like Ray Bradbury?
Oh, heavens yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How about them Martian Chronicles?
Well, now, I learned about them not from the actual book, but from the John Carter, Warlord of Mars, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
I got a whole bunch of those comic books.
You're talking over our heads now, George.
All right, George, good luck with your picture show making.
Well, God's going to help me do it because there's a message in it.
What's the message?
Well,
don't give away the ending, but what, you know, because I don't want to.
Well,
spoil
in the movie, God's going to visit every creature.
Oh, cool.
Everything that lives.
Even really bad people?
Everything.
Even Newt Gingrich?
Everything.
You know, quite often I'm referred to as a three-legged talk show host.
Well, better to have three legs than no legs.
Right on.
I met a man in Phoenix, Arizona that had one leg only. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It was sad. In Vietnam.
You know, I was mad because I had no shoes, and then I met a guy with no legs.
Yeah. You know, my knees bothering me didn't bother me so bad, and that foot pain didn't quite bother me as bad.
Well, we all learned something tonight on the Chris and Rob Show, didn't we, George?
Oh, yeah, I'd say so.
You're going to be tuned in the rest of the night, aren't you?
Oh, for a while, because I don't sleep much at night.
Hey, it's not like you get up and go to work or anything, right?
No.
Well, keep up the good work, George, and keep on dreaming up these movie scenarios and keep on thinking about how to solve the problem with the asteroid that's on the collision course for Earth, because your talents may be needed in that department one of these days. NASA's going to catch an old tape of this show when it's floating around, you know, and NASA's going to say, we got to find that George guy in Cincinnati.
There's only one real way to do it, though.
What's that?
If we start mining the asteroid belt, when an asteroid starts moving towards Earth, all we do is mine that sucker away.
But what are they made out of? Do we want that stuff?
That's not the point. We just go in there with our little ships.
What's the use of mining this asteroid if it's got nothing on it but, you
know,
it's going
to say it keeps it from hitting the Earth, Chris.
Right.
But what if we don't need that
stuff?
You just
mine it away so it's just nothing.
Yeah. Or we can hit it with a big giant water hose.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, George.
Yep. Have a good one.
I think George is going to stay tuned in, don't you?
Boy, I hope so.
Chris and Rob, late night talk show. I'm Chris.
At least till he passes out. And I'm Rob, WAIF. We never say the call letters anymore. You'll go the whole show without saying the call
letters.
That's
right. You got to say the call letters.
No one knows what station we're listening to. No, they don't.
Yeah, they do, because the same 13 people listen to the station every week. 749-1444 is the phone number at the Chris and Rob Show.
And those people really have bad short-term memories, too. They need to be reminded a lot of what they're doing.
From all the drugs they did back in
college. Hey, you're driving a car listening to WAIF.
So give a call to the Chris and Rob Show, 749-1444. And you know what it's time for now?
Yeah, it's a very special dual presentation of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show Attaboy Awards.
Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, we started the Attaboy Awards years and years and years ago when we got a lot of public criticism that our show was too negative,
mm-hmm.
and that we didn't accentuate the positivity in our community and in our country and in the world. So we created the Attaboy Awards, where we say attaboy and give a pat on the back to somebody who's deserving of a thumbs up. And here's Rob with this week's Attaboy Award.
Part one, Ernie Estrada, you're the man. He's out there fishing in Colorado, and he caught something huge, but he can't keep it. He was just tooling down the road. He found a purse. Guess what was in the purse?
What was in the purse?
Sure, some lipstick. Yeah, a pocket mirror. Perhaps cosmetics, some Maybelline eyeliner.
Some Kleenex, maybe?
All that stuff.
Girls always keep Kleenex in their purse.
Also, $1,000 in cash.
Damn!
He says it's just not in him to keep the money, but he found that giving it back wasn't all that easy. The owner of the purse had an unlisted number.
Man.
And Estrada went through a number of police agencies before he found one that would take the responsibility for tracking down the owner. The guy, Estrada, is a restaurant manager, says he can he can feel for the owner. He says he once lost a wallet. That's a Foster Brooks thing there.
Oh, is it?
Did you catch that?
Yeah, that's great.
He says he once lost a wallet and $300 while playing golf. Estrada says he got the wallet back, but not the money. So, as the first half of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show Attaboy Award, to Ernie Estrada, Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show says,
salute!
And a little girl had a dream.
Now, is this part two of the Attaboy? We're giving away two Attaboy Awards this week.
This one's actually an Atta Girl.
Okay.
A little girl had a dream. Growing up in Trinidad, Tobago, this girl wanted to be Miss Universe. Sure, she was tall, lanky, ungainly. And sure, Miss Puerto Rico had the most absolute perfect thighs and God's green earth. And sure, Miss Venezuela had a 400-kilowatt smile and incredibly firm, sticking straight out, gravity-defying bosoms.
Oh, yeah.
But that did not deter Ms. Trinidad Tobago. She went for the crown, and she got it. So, Ms. Trinidad Tobago, Miss Universe 1998, the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show says,
salute!
There's your Attaboy and Attagirl awards for this week on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Tune in next week for a very exciting and positive Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show Attaboy Awards, where we say salute, attaboy, and give a little pat on the back to somebody who deserves it. You know, if it was up to me this week, I would have given an Attaboy Awards to the country of India, because they're not going to let anybody push them around. They ain't going to let no Pakistani push them around. They ain't going to let no Chinese push them around. They're going to go ahead and defend themselves.
What about the Indians in northern India? Are they going to let them push them around?
That's right.
There's like all kinds of fighting between some of the Indians and some of the Indians who live in northern, the Sikhs.
But the government of India is not going to let anyone push them around, none of their neighbors. And, you know, they're going to catch a lot of flack from the rest of the world. Well, mostly just from the other six nuclear countries, which are America.
Six? You think there's only six?
Well, there's America, Russia, Great Britain, France.
India.
India and China.
Israel.
And Israel's gone. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Israel doesn't have the bomb. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Israel doesn't have the bomb.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway,
South
India,
Africa?
They don't got one, do
they?
They
got the bomb.
Did they ever test it?
They have uranium and they have diamonds coming out of their ears in South Africa. Like, they can't afford to get the bomb. South Africa has the bomb. Maybe we're not supposed to know that, but I'm telling you, South Africa has it. And Germans, how the Germans could do anything. You give them a bunch of paper clips, they'll have a bomb built pretty soon.
So, you know, if you know, you always tell me that the Attaboy Award should not be tongue-in-cheek, but I'm serious. The country of India should have the right to defend themselves, especially when they got neighbors like Pakistan and China.
I tell you what, if India drops an atomic bomb on Pakistan on the border, how smart is that? That would be like us dropping an atomic bomb on Toronto or Windsor.
I know,
just
that would be stupid.
They're not very
but
smart.
But they got to have the capability. Let's say somebody lives next door to you, and they get a cannon, and they point it at you.
Chris?
And let's say the people on the other side of you, of your house, they get a cannon, and they point at you. What are you going to do? You're going to get a cannon yourself and point it right back. You're going to get two cannons. Point one to the guy on the left and point one at the guy on the right, aren't you?
Here's another point, Chris. It used to be that you counted all the Soviet Union as one nation with the bomb. Now you've got the Soviet Union with the bomb. You've got Ukraine with the bomb. Georgia probably has the bomb. Azerbaijan may have the bomb. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarusia, who knows? All these different Turkmania could all these places could have the bomb.
That would be like giving Indiana a bomb and giving Delaware a bomb.
No, they're completely different.
Ohio a bomb.
No, this was a collection
let's give
of
Newt Gingrich a bomb down in Georgia, and let's give a bomb to Texas.
No, these were a collection.
That's all
the
we
Soviet
need is
Union
Texas
was
to have a bomb.
Was a very huge collection of heterogeneous populations who had their own culture,
I
languages.
Never said they were gay.
And they weren't supposed to, and there's no way. I mean, you take your average person living in Asia, Soviet Union part, like, you know, right above Iran, they had nothing in common with the Latvians.
Yeah.
But they were just brought, or the Lithuanians, they were all just brought together under Moscow's iron grip. So now all these nations that used to be the Soviet Union all have the bomb, too. So now, you know, the atomic fraternity is up to, like, in the 20s. We don't even know where all these little bombs went after the Soviet Union broke up.
Some of them probably got sold to Iran and Iraq. That's all we know. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. This next song goes out to India.
Told you about me.
Beatles. That one goes out to our good friends in India.
WAIF.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and some of the engineers are here. Some of the WAIF engineering department is here. They're out in the hallway twiddling some knobs, soldering some cables together, and getting things all prepared for our big live link-up. Do what?
They're showing tons of plumbers crack, too.
We're getting ready. We're just about to push a couple of buttons and twist a couple of knobs. We got a live link-up with the Mir Space Station right here on WAIF. So stand by. We should be linked up to the Mir Space Station any second now.
All right, try it, Chris. Try it, Rob.
Hello. My name is Boris Luzhogradskis, and I am the commander of the Mir Space Station.
And I am Vladimir Slap-Your-Dick-A-Lot, the co-pilot of the Mir Space Station, and I know where the vodka is stored on board.
Vladimir, we are expecting a very important guest today. So why don't you prepare a few cocktails with that vodka you've been hiding away?
Okie dokie, Boris. Look out the pod bay window, Boris. Here comes the American Space Shuttle Columbia now. It must be carrying our very important guest.
Oh, goody. Let's open the pod bay doors.
That was a bumpy ride. Well, hello there, my Russian cosmonaut friends. I'm Bill Clinton, President of the United States of America and leader of the free world. You boys got any of those powdered McDonald's french fries up here? Boy, I sure am famished.
Welcome aboard the Mir Space Station, comrade President Clinton. What brings you to our floating house in outer space?
Oh, the media.
The media? What has the media got to do with anything?
Well, the media's following me around like a bunch of hungry dogs, and I'm a walking milk bone. Speaking of bones, you boys got any powdered baby back spare ribs up here? Boy, weightlessness sure can make a president hungry.
Well, President Clinton, comrade, I think you are safe from Sam Donaldson and his evil toupee here. and all the paparazzi. There is none up here on the space station Mir.
Oh, good, dude. I guess it's safe now to check the space shuttle for any stowaways on board who may have snuck on board when no one was looking. Speaking of stowaways, you got any of those powdered cheeseburgers stowed away up here? You Ruskies do eat, don't you?
Yeah, Mr. President. We Russians love bread and vodka.
Vodka, now you're talking. First, let's check the space shuttle for stowaways.
Come out wherever you are, you sneaky little stowaway. Ollie, oxen free.
Oh, Bill, what took you so long?
Monica, baby, my favorite White House intern. Can a star give you permission to stow away on this executive mission?
No, you did, silly.
Pop down.
What should we do with this stowaway, Mr. President Clinton, comrade, sir?
Well, boys, this is a matter of national security, and I think I should personally interrogate her myself. Now, why don't you boys go and see if you can rustle up a couple of those outer space powdered sloppy joes? I'm sure our stowaway is hungry after her long trip into outer space.
Sure thing, Mr. President Clinton.
You're just gonna love weightlessness, Monica. You sure could use it.
Tune in next week as our friends on the space station Mir deliver the predictable zero-gravity blowjob joke.
Vladimir, have you seen President Clinton? I can't find him anywhere on the space station Mir.
I think I saw him in the cockpit.
Mike Watt, his new CD is called Contemplating the Engine Room. It's a rock opera, isn't it?
Yes, it's a rock opera.
It's all about Mike Watt's early days in rock and roll, punk rock, and all the different things that have happened to him. It's also got some biographical songs about his family, and we're going to ask Mike about it here any second now, because Mike Watt is just wrapping up a show in Portland, Maine at the Stone Coast Brewery. It's located at 14 York Street in Portland, Maine. He's playing there tonight, and he's pulling the van around, isn't he? That's what my producer
said. He's pulling the van around or something.
And we're going to talk to him any second now. But in case you've never heard of Mike Watt, he was the founding member, the bass player of the Minutemen until the guitar player D. Boone passed on, and then after another year or so of hiatus, formed a band called Firehose. with the same drummer from the Minutemen called George Hurley, and a new guitar player called Ed Crawford, who coincidentally is from Ohio. Isn't he from like Akron or someplace? Columbus?
I thought he was
like
from Columbus, and he was credited a lot as Ed from Ohio, one word.
A couple of years back, Firehose broke up, Mike Watt went on his own, and now Mike Watt is joining us from the Stone Coast Brewery. Hello, Mike.
Hey, I'm in Portland, Maine.
How are things in Portland,
Tomorrow's
Maine?
Tomorrow's Northampton, playing with Jay Maskus's new band because he broke up Dinosaur. It's called Wank Factor 7.
And you're playing with him now?
No, I'm going to share the stage with
him. Oh, you're like, they're opening for you.
Yeah, we're gonna do 3 gigs. And I just done 7 gigs with Jack Drag.
Yeah.
They opened up. And then after Wank Factor 7, I do 7 gigs with Skrull.
Really?
Yes, Ohio band.
Well, they'll be playing with you at Sudsy Malone's Monday night.
Absolutely.
This coming Monday.
And Toledo, my first Toledo gig ever after 37 tours.
You've never played in Toledo before?
No.
Well, trust me, all the kids in Toledo drive up to Ann Arbor to see you at the Blind Pig. They always do.
Oh, then, yeah, that's right. Ann Arbor's right around the corner.
Well, welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
What's up? I haven't talked with you guys in a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. How you been?
Absolute.
You know, after just playing a gig at the Stone Coast...
I'm a focused man. I'm an opera man.
You are an opera man. You're like the Giuseppe Verdi of rock and roll. How'd that happen?
Well, I wanted to say... find a way to say thank you to the old days, D. Boone and the SST and Georgie and just all that thing without it being some kind of Happy Days Fonzie shit
sort of
thing. And the magic of metaphor, you know, the boat is the van. We are but sailors.
The CD is called Contemplating the Engine Room, and a lot of the songs are like Boiler Man
or
really In the Engine
Room.
It's
one song. The Boiler Man is D. Boone. I'm the machinist mate, and Georgie's the fireman.
George was the drummer in Firehose and the Minutemen, right?
Right, right. And Firehose.
Right on. Why'd you break up Firehose? That was a pretty rocking band.
Well, I was actually a Firehose longer than I was a Minuteman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and things got a little predictable. And, you know, I'm a old punk rocker, and I think you gotta lift the bar. You probably want to hear that same song over and over again, but I tell you, the working man who make up those songs get tired of it. They got to have challenge.
Change is good.
Change or scariness, being scared.
So you
are... That you know you're alive. That's a Hemingway. Says your balls all draw up into you. You know, you know you're alive. When you get in cruise control, when you get into autopilot, things are scary.
Mike Watt, your new CD and rock opera is called Contemplating the Engine Room, and you've been playing this thing for almost a year now on the road from club to club with a band.
Yeah. This is the third tour. I'm going to do one more, though.
And play the whole thing again?
I do a whole year.
When is Tommy going to hit... When are you going to hit Broadway like Tommy did? That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Now, this celebrates three people playing.
Yeah.
You know, and I heard Tommy, they changed the ending for the new version.
You wouldn't let him do that to you, would you?
No way.
This thing,
the ending of my piece is really sad. You know, the Boiler Man, he sleepwalks and walks off the boat and drowns, falls overboard. And I don't know about some long-live rock kind of coda for that, you know?
Right.
That's why I call it an opera, because in a way it was a tragedy.
It's a tragic opera.
But it's a different kind of thing. It's a, yeah, it's not a commedia, it's an opera. It's over 24 hours. I took it from a Jimmy Joyce with Ulysses. You know, it starts in the early dawn, and it goes all the way around. Because I think everybody has all the emotions they're going to live in their life, and every day. The day is the primary cycle. So, you're happy, you're sad, you're bored, you're interested, you're full with endeavor, you're cynical. All in one day. Think about it. Morning, afternoon, night. And at nighttime, you fall asleep, you dream. And things get very abstract. And it's weird to play this in front of cats, because most rock gigs are like Nuremberg rallies, where it gets faster and faster, and everybody starts coming all over each other. And this does not happen in my piece. It gets slower and slower. So it's kind of a challenge for the cats. In a way, I can be a 40-year-old man that still is punk. You know, because the Berlin Walls are in our heads. And the hardest lesson I learned was, you're going to lose people.
Mike, would you say
but
that...
But if you still got work where you can express yourself, you're a lucky man. That's why I say at the end, I'm a lucky man.
Would you say that Contemplating the Engine Room is going over well with audiences from coast to coast?
Well, man, I've had a lot of cats come up to me and said they were glad that I did it. I don't know if it's up there with the Third Eye Blind and whatever, the Matchbox 20.
That stuff's crap. Don't worry about that stuff.
Okay. Well, you asked me one of those kind of questions.
But I mean, when you're at the show and you're playing it, and you get 5 songs into it, you get 10 songs in it, and when you're at the end of it, after 15 songs, are the kids and the audience, are they like, yeah? Are they like, or are they just like, whatever?
No, they trip.
Yeah, they're into it?
Yeah.
You doing an encore?
Oh, I do like 5 or 6.
Right on. Damn.
Thank you, Grant.
Who's Graham?
Respect. Graham is the boss here. You know, it's a pleasure working for him. But yeah, I you know what? There hasn't been a gig yet where he didn't have me back.
You just played
it. And, you know, look, that's respect to the cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they kind of see through the phoniness of the alternative, and they know it's just a jive thing with words, and they want to see some real deal.
We're talking to Mike Watt on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. You just got done playing a gig at the Stone Coast Brewery in Portland,
Maine. I'm doing 48 gigs in 51 days. This is gig number 24
in a row. You sound surprisingly lucid after having just played a gig.
Well, one lifetime is made of many gigs.
Yeah.
The sun rises, the sun sets.
And you're saying some gigs you're more lucid than others.
Yeah, but there's something very real about doing this piece, man. You know, it's not just a bunch of songs, man. It's a trip for me. I relive the whole thing, the beginning, the middle, and the end. You know, the Boiler Man and the Fireman are up there with me. And it's really, it's Joe Baiza and Bob Lee. And you wait till you see how we set up. Me and Joe Baiza are exactly looking at each other. I don't face the crowd. What I want to make the stage look like is if you're looking in at a garage at some band playing, where they're all, you know how most practice pads are, you're all staring at each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not looking at some mythical
audience.
Right. I remember once these Hollywood cats had me do some gig up in some benefit. And for the practice, we went, they said, why come up this room? And this room had one big mirror for the wall. And I would not look.
Mm-hmm.
I would not.
You wouldn't look at
like,
yourself.
It was Randy California, Ray Manzarek, and cats like this. And I would not look in the mirror. You know, life is in cycles. And I think, I don't want to talk about the good old days, you know. I think this stuff is still around. I think Slater Kinney with the Kill Rock Star. I think Ian still sells 200,000 records out of his house with the Discord. And these days are not over.
You're saying punk rock is still alive and well?
Yeah, as a spirit. As a spirit.
Well, not probably always will be for that matter.
Not really a Green Day gig.
Well, do you think Green Day is just a sellout punk rock band, or do you think they still have the punk rock ethic?
I think they sound a lot like the Descendants and Buzzcocks.
Uh-huh. Do you think they're real?
Yeah, see...
They're popular. That's not necessarily punk rock, though.
Well, see, you asked a very deep question, really. Well,
what if you sold a billion records next year? What if you came out with a record that had a pop song on it? What if you got like Green Day? Would people be giving you, the rack?
What if we could do what Tesla said and make electricity free? I charge up the earth, put a big field around the earth. Because Tesla said that the wires for electricity were like the railroad. And whoever owns the railroad owns us. And so he put a lightning rod in the earth and he tried to charge it so we could have free electricity. What if we could do that? I mean, why does the big dream have to be me selling a million records?
Well, I'm just wondering how you would react if people started giving you the crap that they give to Green Day. Once upon a time, Green Day was probably...
I've been getting crap. I've made that wrestling record and had Ed Vedder on it, and you don't know the hell I've gotten.
Yeah? What was wrong with the wrestling record? It was fine.
I liked it.
Yeah?
I really liked it.
Well, who gave you crap for it? Did you poke their eyes out after they did?
Yeah. All the top 40 ponytail, new wave, whatever, disc jockeys and this and that. And sometimes you need crap. Look at nature. You want a good crop? You need a lot of manure.
That's right. You need Madonna from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who's her boss? No one. She's tough. Lady's tough.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're talking to Mike Watt, who just completed playing a gig in Portland, Maine. And you're going to be in Cincinnati on Monday night doing your laundry and playing another
gig.
Doing
the laundry,
here.
Drinking the bourbon.
Let me ask you a question about your
delivering
band.
Delivering the piece.
Can I ask you about your band, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely.
You recorded the record Contemplating the Engine Room with a band that was Nels Klein on guitar, Stephen Hodgins on drum, and yourself on the bass.
Yeah. But,
and you toured with those guys, right?
No. No, only Mr. Hodges.
Oh, you did?
Mr. Klein had to help the Geraldine Fibbers. He had committed to them.
They're not a bad group. They're pretty all right.
No, Carla's an old friend of mine.
Right. But this time this time you got Joe Baiza. Is it Baiza or Baizia?
No, it's Baiza.
Baiza. Joe Baiza on guitar and Bob Lee on drums. Does the rock opera come off differently with a different group?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the difference?
Different people. What they bring to the party. But I'll tell you about Joe Baiza. Joe Baiza was living downstairs from Deep Boom when we started the Minutemen 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Joe Baiza, I share a lot with him.
So you're saying he can relate to the piece?
He's not a Nels Klein clone. No, he's his own man. He's a Latin man.
Yeah. Well, wasn't he in a group, Universal Congress of?
That's right. That was his band.
Yeah.
And he was Saccharine Trust before that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from the town next to Pedro, a harbor town called Wilmington. And he was in Germany last year, and some Nazis beat him and broke his hand. The German government paid for it to be fixed. Joe Biden's been through some hell.
Yeah.
But, man, he steps up to the plate with his piece.
And he does a good job with it, huh?
He's a sweetie.
Is there anything you want to say to Cincinnati before you get here on Monday? Before you rock our world?
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, in the old days, you could never play Cincinnati. You always had to play Newport.
Right. The Jockey Club.
Yeah. Right? The whore town across the river.
I got you.
All right. Nowadays, we can't play the real town. And so, I think, thank you for Cincinnati to open it up. Mr. Flint still got his bookstore?
Barely. He's hanging on by a tooth and a thread.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you something. That dude's got Hollywood behind him and about $1 billion. I don't think Cincinnati has a chance with him this time.
I thought Cincinnati had Procter & Gamble.
Well, yeah, but
Larry Flint, how many millions they got?
Larry Flint's big, dude. P&G's going down.
Procter & Gamble?
P&G's going down because they test on animals, and Chiquita's going down because they suppress migrant workers and, the banana farmers down in South America.
Yeah, absolute.
So we're and our baseball team sucks, too. The Reds have just lost 3 in a row to Atlanta.
Man. You know, the Heartland's got some heart.
You want me to have Larry Flint come down to your show? Let me see if I can get him to show up.
Absolutely.
Has he been to any of your shows?
I don't think so. He's got a building, though, on La Cienega on Restaurant Row.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Been there?
It's called the Flint Building. I've never been in it. I drove by it all the lot.
Yeah.
Going up to play gigs.
You like his magazine?
Don't read it.
Good for you. It's filthy and disgusting.
I still want it to have the right to publish it, though.
Yeah.
Man like me in the business I'm in, I need open borders. I need open minds.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I have to read it.
Doesn't mean you have to read the filth and disgusting pornography.
I don't have to read Mein Kampf either, you know.
Right.
I don't have to read Generation X or whatever crap they're trying to sell the kids to buy Gap clothes.
Well, Mike, when you perform Contemplating the Engine Room, do you do it just like on the disc? Do you go song one right through track 15?
Yeah, it's one song.
It's a rock opera, dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's a piece.
Do you ever listen to, like, old opera, like Italian opera from the 1800s?
Yeah, absolute.
What do you like about that stuff? I mean, it's kind of hard to get into with all the screeching sopranos and...
No, but you get to hear the guy talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like.
The story.
My mama's Italian. You got to understand.
Yeah. So you like Giuseppe Verdi.
Verdi's down.
Puccini.
Even that German guy in Mozart.
Yeah, you like him? The Magic Flute?
Yeah, he did one about Masons, you know, Magic Flute.
Yeah. Do the Masons scare you ever?
I took my crew to the shrine. No, they built the country. They're the first American punk rock band.
Yeah.
I took my men to the shrine they built for Washington and Alexandria, and it blew their mind.
Yeah.
333 feet high.
All right, well, we're going to play this song off Contemplating the Engine Room. It's called Black Gang Coffee. It's about
Black Gang is slang for engine room.
Is it?
Yeah. And there's an important book, if you want to understand my opera, it's called The Sand Pebbles by an engine room man called Richard McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, the guys are cooking the coffee right on the motor. It's so hot. And all the oil and all the fuel all blend in there. And he binds his guys together. And he don't care about all that bullshit on the top of the deck with the saluting and all the fraud. He's there with machinery where you cannot lie. It'll bust you. It'll hurt you. If you don't understand its ways. And there's no portholes. And it's a heavy deal.
That stinks down there too, right?
Hey, thanks so much for talking with me.
Hey, you Ben, we're going to try to talk as often as we can.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Don't let the meatloaf.
We won't.
All right.
Take her easy, and we'll be looking at you on Monday night.
Yeah, absolute.
At the laundromat. Mike Watt, he'll be at Sudsy's on Monday night performing that and the rest of that album, Contemplating the Engine Room.
It's an opera, dude. It's one big song.
Yeah, so check it out. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, WAIF, the bottom of your dial. You can't go no lower than us. Just try it. Or you're going to get a shh. So this is it, baby. 749-1444. That's the phone number. 749-1444. And the lines are open for your input. Call now, 749-1444.
Channel 5's looking for two new anchors. You want to be on the news, Channel 5 News?
You mean they're getting rid of...
No, Barbara Kane is weekend anchor. She's leaving. Caroline Thau, T-H-A-U. I don't know if I've ever seen her.
Well, you and I should audition. We could be Chris and Rob with the news.
She'll be leaving, too. So Lisa Cooney will probably get moved up. This is according to the Inquirer. Dude.
Well, that would be a great opportunity for us to broaden our broad
to Lisa Cooney's job.
Oh yeah, well we should try it. Here. Let's try it out. Hello and welcome to the Channel 5 News. I'm Chris.
Hello, I'm Rob.
What's new in the news today, Rob?
At Cape Canaveral, Florida. If construction delays and rising costs weren't enough, NASA is grappling with another space station dilemma. just what to call it. The International Space Station has no name other than ISS, the International Space Station, you know, the usual NASA alphabet soup. But station managers want a real name, astronauts want a real name, and public affairs types really, really want something catchier. Naming the station isn't as easy as it seems, officials maintain, because 16 countries are involved in the project, and they would all have to agree. This is not just a half dozen people sitting around a table coming up with the answer, said John David Bartow, research manager for the space station. Here are a few snags. The Russians, they take umbrage at Alpha or any other name that suggests a beginning or a first. This is according to Bill Bates, chief of staff for NASA's International Space Station program. After all, they point out their country has been flying space stations since 1971. And forget about naming the space station after an explorer, some other historical figure. It would be a thorny nationalistic issue for the European Space Agency. Besides, the Japanese Space Agency would balk. We could call it Big Boy.
And in other news,
Big Man a Little.
Are you done?
No. What's that? What's the name
You're
of the
bombs? You're
not done yet? Big, come on, what are the names of the bombs?
Hey, on Channel 5, the stories never go this long.
What were the names of the bombs that we dropped on Japan?
They were a Big Man and Little
Fat Boy. Fat
yeah,
boy.
Well, we should call it Fat Man. See if the Japs like that.
Are you done with this yet?
To the Japanese, you don't put people's names on inanimate objects. It's again their culture. They go with signs of nature, again, like flowers or things like that. Despite the hurdles, the goal is to have a name before orbital assembly begins, possibly in September.
Well, maybe we could call the space station the Precious Wilted Lily.
We could call it Woody.
And in other news, in Colorado Springs, Colorado, you better watch what you say or you could be arrested. Police in Colorado Springs are enforcing an anti-cussing ordinance. The law has been on the books for years, possibly dating back to the 1920s. But this ordinance has not been enforced much until recently. Last year, officers of Colorado Springs have handed out 14 tickets. That's 14. That's a big 1-4 for what's termed as indecent language in city parks. That's up from just 2 tickets the year before. The American Civil Liberties Union, also known as the ACLU, is asking the police chief of Colorado Springs not to enforce the anti-profanity rule. The ACLU claims that the right of free speech includes cussing in public. And on Channel 5, in the tradition of Jerry Springer, here's my co-host Rob with a commentary regarding this.
Thanks, Chris. Here's Jim's audition tape. He's our CIA director.
I thought you were going to do a commentary. Like
that's
Jerry...
later.
Oh, okay. That's right. We save that for the end, don't we?
From the Washington Post, the CIA's human espionage capability has dwindled since the Cold War and needs to be rebuilt. In the view of the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Representative Porter J. Goss, a Republican from Florida, said that there were limits in how well U.S. intelligence estimated Iraq President Saddam Hussein's intentions to use chemical and biological weapons. His panel increased funds and recommended a CIA hiring plan in the fiscal 1999 Intelligence Authorization Bill, approved Thursday in the House.
I don't think you're going to pass the audition, because not only do you have to talk good on TV, but you have to look good as well. And in a moment, we'll have a commentary regarding public, indecent
well,
language
I'll tell
in public.
You this. I'll tell you this.
But first, let's get... George well, has... No,
no, not no. What okay. are you, high? Both you guys sweat way too much to be on TV.
You think so?
I just want to say that right now. Ohio farmers say manure ban stinks.
No.
They don't like the town telling them what to do. In Morrill, Ohio, farmers say they don't like a new ordinance that bans the use of animal manure or treated human waste as fertilizer within the village. They're also opposed to a proposal to ease the restrictions. So you can look forward to farmers just going out in cornfields and taking a Monster Jake now instead of going to the stores and buying the bagged up manure.
Are you ready for your commentary
no,
now?
No, I just kind of added there at the end.
You're not going to do a commentary on indecent language in public? Do you ever say swear words in front of kids when you're at Frisch's?
The world's not going to end if we can't use chicken manure out here, but what's next? If we use some chemical that smells, are they going to ban that too?
So what happened? You guys decided you didn't want to talk to that?
Manure generated by more than 3 million chickens at Buckeye Egg in nearby Hardin County is spread on the cropland by willing farmers.
What? Now, you think this is going to be news on Channel 5 this weekend? Do you think this is going to be a good audition tape?
Within a half a mile outside of the town, we've picked up tons and tons of this stuff piled up. It has chicken heads and chicken feet in the manure.
And now, here's Rob with sports.
In sports today,
apes' brains match ours.
No, they don't.
Bill Hopkins put 10 different species of monkeys and apes into an MRI scanner.
Oh, I heard about this. Some monkeys French kiss. They got monkeys that French kiss. They really do. Monkeys, they not
only bonobos,
they
retard.
Bonobos.
You stinking.
The bonobos do it missionary style, and they French kiss.
You're too dumb to be on TV. They're bonobos.
At least you're too fat and ugly.
You sweat too much to be on TV.
It's because I work hard.
It's because you're a hog.
You should see me in the sack.
It's because you're a hog. So you want to hear some more about the chicken manure story?
Not really. Is it time to take a call here? 749-1444. I think we failed our audition. I don't think you'll be seeing Chris and Rob.
You got a frog in your pocket?
Yeah.
I passed with flying colors.
You're too ugly.
I was great.
You are not.
You stink.
You stuttered twice.
You smell bad.
749-1444, the Chris and Rob Wait Night Talk Show at 749-1444.
So anyway, you probably saw this in the paper Monday in the Inquirer.
Is this about the bonobos?
It's about the bonobos.
They're so cute.
You know, okay, it's a species of chimpanzee, or a close relative of the chimpanzee, where the women are clearly in charge. The female chimps, the female bonobos, run the society. And now, this is, they are throwing a kink into the whole works, because we always assumed, you know, we had the common ancestors, and that our common ancestors were, you know, these radical men running things type organizations, type societies, just completely crazy, patriarchal, yeah, patriarch type societies. This is throwing a monkey wrench into those theories, because the females of the species are running things. Now, I think what this says, what these scientists are claiming, is look at the dumb monkeys. They let chicks run things. Uh-huh. I think that's the point of this study. But no, what will happen is they have sex all the time, not to procreate, but to settle conflict or get to know each other. And unlike other animals, they have it face-to-face with some French kissing thrown in. Oh, yeah. So I like the settled conflict part of it. So you're at the grocery store. You're in checkout.
So you're in the quick lane, the 12 items or less lane. Some dude's got 13 items.
Well, no, some female has 14 items in front of you. You get mad, and you're like, hey, what are you doing? She pushes you and says, back off, buddy. So you push her back and you say, forget it. Next thing you know, you're French kissing and you're settling your conflict with procreation.
That's the life of the bonobo ape.
That's crazy.
I'd love to get in a bonobo checkout line.
You know what they were really saying about those chimps, don't you?
What?
Look at those smart male monkeys. They got the chicks to do all the work.
They're way ahead of us. Wait a minute. Don't we already get the chicks to do all the work? I mean, you and I, we go to the office. While the ladies stay home and they cook and they clean and they run a vacuum cleaner and they clean a toilet and a bathtub and they mop the floor in the kitchen and they clean the basement and they clean out the garage and they fix the transmission on your car and they mow the lawn and trim the hedges and do all the yard work and plant the garden and everything, clean the attic, take care of the kids, drive the kids to school, drive the kids to soccer practice, clean up all the puke after the kid pukes after, you know, this god-awful lunch she made them. And, I mean, you know. It's exactly the same.
No, dude, this is what you're trying to do. And you guys, you people, you make me sick.
You make me sick. Just because you're fat and ugly.
Because there are some people in the world who are, I think, hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool feminists. That was so clever. Fat and ugly. My God, who wrote that one for you? Well, did you get some of Gary Shanley's writers to come up with that one for you? Man, I bet you paid a lot for that one.
Yeah?
Yeah, you broke the cord now, didn't you?
Yeah, you have to.
Because you're
to
so
that.
Stupid.
Him stupid.
I'm smelly. No, research
you do
shows
a lot.
You know, WAIF, we play
research
by the
shows
book
you're a retard.
Duh, you're so funny. Anyway, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
I was going to say that there are, you know, some hardcore feminists who support the feminist agenda.
You know what I've heard about
believe
feminists?
In it wholeheartedly. And then there are other guys like you who just make me sick. Who are just like, I'm a feminist because it'll help me get laid. You're just like, man, you women, I tell you what,
you
women, this is Arsenio Hall, you women, I tell you what, the women, now they be the ones with all the brains in the world. They do all the work. They are so smart. I got to hand it to the ladies. You ladies, you are so much smarter than us guys. We guys are dumb. You ladies are so smart. I tell you what, because you women, you know, you do all the work and you work so hard. Give yourselves a big round of applause. Yeah, come back in my dressing room after this show. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to be some kind of white bread vanilla wafer Arsenio Hall and kiss chicks' butts so they'll crawl in a sack
well,
with
I
you.
I got a secret.
It's not cutting.
I got a secret for all of our bachelor listeners out there who are trying to get a little leg action. Feminists become feminists because they really like it. I mean, they like it a lot. You should see a feminist in the sack. Oh, my God. And that's why feminists become feminists, because it gives them a feeling of power. It gives them the feeling of choice. And because they just are horny as all get out.
So why does that have to do with feminism?
Well, that's why girls become feminists in the first place.
So they can get more sex?
Yeah. Without any repercussions or you know, the needing to make relationships or, you know, you don't have to have a commitment.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Because you're a feminist. So since you're a feminist, you're pro-choice and you're anti-commitment. Therefore,
anti-commitment and pro-feminist. Why are those two positions the same?
They are.
Why? How?
Have you ever screwed a feminist?
All the time.
Yeah, right.
I'm always screwed. Dude, I'm going
to... You've never gotten laid in your life.
Dude, I'll go to a Take Back the Night march, and I'll go home in like a four-way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you think I'm kidding?
Where's Gloria Steinem when you need her?
I'll Take Back the Night. Hey, you know what? 6 inches long.
No, I don't. We're not going there. This has been another edition of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, where I'm Chris and he's fat and ugly. The phone number has been 749-1444.
He's fat and ugly. Okay, it's over. He's fat and ugly. You're stupid, Rob. You're fat and ugly.